You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 14th of April 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, continuing on from the race riots news story that's happening over in Minneapolis at the moment over the latest black marcher of the Black Lives Matter movement, the police officer responsible for shooting the black criminal by mistake has resigned. Kim Potter, the Brooklyn Center police officer who shot Deontay Wright during a traffic stop, has resigned effective immediately. In addition to Potter, Brooklyn Center Mayor Mike Elliott announced that Police Chief Tim Gannon had resigned as well. The mayor said the new police leadership was committed to working with community leaders and protesters who say that Wright was racially profiled. How can they claim that he was racially profiled? The police ran a check on his license plate, and the license plate said that that car was not insured. So they pulled the car over, and when they asked who the driver was, and he told them his name, they did a police check on his name and discovered that there was a warrant out for his arrest. Race played no part in this whatsoever. Race played no part in the reason why he was pulled over, unless they're going to say that black people, because of historic injustices against them, they're late with paying for their insurance installments, and that leaves the car uninsured. I'm sure they would probably try to claim something like that, that this was due to racism is the reason why they forgot to insure the car, and therefore that's why there are more black drivers that get pulled over for traffic violations, and it's to do with race somehow. But they haven't yet tried that, I don't think, but they are claiming that this was all down to race when quite clearly it wasn't. I mean, even if you're in the police car behind, how are you going to be able to tell what race the driver is? Are they saying that if it had been a white driver that was driving with no insurance, the police would not have pulled him over? And if he hadn't have been trying to escape, if he hadn't have been resisting arrest and trying to flee the scene, then he wouldn't have been shot, would he? Okay, it was a mistake. The police lady thought she had a taser in her hand, and she didn't. She had a gun in her hand. But if he hadn't been resisting arrest, she would not have even got involved there. She would not have had the pistol in her hand. And apparently she'd actually been with the police force for 25 years. And this shows that it doesn't matter how much training you can give to somebody, they can still always make mistakes. And women are known for sometimes not knowing the difference between right and left. I mean, obviously they do know the difference between right and left, but they will often get it mixed up, particularly with directions. I'm not sure why. It just seems to be something that women sometimes have problems with. As I say, they do know the difference between right and left, but sometimes, on occasion, they may get flustered. They may get confused. And unfortunately, this time, that has led to somebody losing their life. But if only Deontay Wright had not been resisting the arrest in the first place, he would still be alive today. Now, we also have an update on the reason why there was a warrant out for his arrest. Deontay Wright choked a woman and threatened to shoot her if she did not hand over $820 that she had stuffed in her bra, court papers allege. And that is the case that led to a warrant for his arrest at the time he was shot and killed by police officer Kimberly Potter in Minnesota on Sunday, leading to 3 days of unrest. and online speculation that he did not know there was a warrant out for his arrest is false. A letter returned to the court for having a wrong address was giving notice of a court date in August and had nothing to do with the warrant. It was quite clear that he was fearful about something. That was why he was trying to flee from the police. Because there was this warrant out for his arrest, it means that he would have been put on remand, basically. He would have been put in prison until the time of this court case that he was wanted for, because he hadn't turned up for the last one. So that was the reason why he was fleeing. And of course, we've seen all the relatives talking about what an angel he was. The same as with George Floyd, talking about what an angel George Floyd was, an angel that put a pistol into the belly of a pregnant woman and threatened to shoot her if she didn't hand money over, which is rather similar to Deontay Wright choking a woman, pointing a gun at her and threatening to shoot her if she did not hand over the money. I'm sure people have seen the scenes. They're all on international news of the rioting and looting last night, and it is basically the same thing happening again as it did last year. And suspiciously, it is happening at the same time as the closing days of the George Floyd trial, or the trial into whether George Floyd was lawfully killed or not, I should say. And just as a final point to do with this, with women in the police, women outnumber men for the first time ever at a British police force. Wiltshire Police has 1,140 female officers and staff compared to 1,101 male employees, a report has revealed. All but one of the force's 63 civilian staff hired between 2019 and last year were female. Is that not misandry? Is that not anti-male to be excluding males like that? You would think that equality legislation would prevent a police force from employing 62 females and only one male as part of their civilian staff, but no, apparently that's quite fine and they're very proud of this. The report found that men and women are paid equally at every grade in Wiltshire Police, and 53% of successful police officer candidates in March 2020 were female, of ethnic minority, ex-military or other protected characteristics. Chief Constable Keir Pritchard said he was pleased with the findings and committed to recruiting even more women to senior positions. He added, "We have seen a 10% increase year on year in females becoming officers." Well, is this such a good idea when police need to have an imposing presence on the streets? They need to be able to apprehend criminals. And when you have a woman police officer, she is already starting out handicapped in a way, because she's going to have a third less body strength. The only way she can compensate for that is by using a weapon. And if you are using a weapon, there is a much higher chance of serious injury occurring to the criminal. And when we have serious injury or death that occurs to them, and they happen to be non-white, then we see the events unfolding as they are in Minneapolis. Thankfully, Wiltshire isn't really that multicultural. It doesn't have that much diversity there, although it looks like the police force is now much more diverse than the actual population is in general. So hopefully this isn't going to cause too much harm. But if you imagine in the middle of London and you had 50% of the police were women, and they were trying to recruit more women to senior positions, I mean, it's just a recipe for the sort of situation that we see in Minneapolis happening in Britain, really. Well, moving on to continue with what we were talking about yesterday with the report on race and ethnic disparities. This is the report that found that there was no institutional racism in Britain, and said that Britain is a beacon to the rest of the world as to how multiple races and multiple ethnicities can all get on together, which I would disagree with. I don't think it's an example to the world. It may be that we have a multicultural country and we don't have as much violence as there is in America, But if you're actually looking at the way that countries are managed, all you have to do is look at somewhere like Poland or Lithuania or Estonia, places that aren't multicultural, and you'll see that their crime rate is a fraction of what we have in Britain. So mixing the races up together, Britain may not have so much problems as America, but if you don't mix the races up together in the first place, then you're not going to get these sorts of problems. Well, again, let's have a look at what some of these findings are that are in this report. And these are summaries of them, but they are based on facts and statistics. They're not based on simple anecdotes. Black people are three times more likely to be arrested than white people, but juries are not more likely to convict ethnic minority defendants. So what does this tell us? It tells us that black people are three times more likely to commit crimes. And again, this is something that nationalists have been saying for a long time, but of course the anti-racists will say they're not more likely to commit crimes, they're just more likely to be arrested for them. But then we're told that juries are not more likely to be convicting ethnic minority defendants. So these are ethnic minorities that are arrested. They have been justly arrested. They have been arrested for committing a crime. It's not that the police are going out there and they're letting white criminals off and are just going for blacks. And it's not like they are arresting blacks for no reason. They do commit more crime than white people. And we see that consistently wherever we go in the world. David Lammy discovered this. He did a study into this. And the results of that study were that all throughout the multicultural countries, we see that black people are far more likely to be incarcerated and arrested than whites, between 3 to 5 times as likely. And when you look at the extremely violent crimes like murder, shootings, rapes, then they vastly outnumber the number of whites that are arrested and charged for this. And of course, David Lammy said, well, this shows that blacks are being picked on. But all he really had to do is look at what the crime rate was in countries that are majority black or completely black, like some of these countries in Africa. All he has to do is look at the crime statistics in Johannesburg, for instance, to see that even in countries that don't have a white police force and a white jury system, the blacks there still commit just as much crime as they do in these multicultural centres. And I would suggest that the very fact that you have two different cultures and races living alongside, that is going to be more likely to cause friction than monoracial societies. We probably see more violence, say, in London than we would do in places like Tanzania or places like Malawi that are 99% black. The very fact that you have black people, brown people, white people, all different types of people living together in one territory, that fact alone is going to cause friction because there's going to be difficulty with understanding body language, there's going to be difficulty with understanding spoken language, and it could lead to tempers flaring, and it does lead to tempers flaring. So this report basically bears out what nationalists say. Blacks are more likely to be arrested than white folks. If you want to get the arrest numbers down and have less crime, then the way to solve that is to encourage the black criminals to go back to their ancestral homelands. And the way to encourage them to do that doesn't have to be done in a nasty way. You could offer them incentives. You could offer them help to start up their own businesses in Africa to help them away from a life of crime. And that would mean that if they did then carry on committing crimes, it wouldn't actually be in Britain. It would lower the crime rate in Britain. Of course, then they're not going to suggest this, but that is what these figures are showing us when they tell us that blacks are more likely to be criminals than whites. Gangs and gang-related violence are linked to broken families and are not restricted to black communities. In the North, they are largely linked with white communities. And this bears relevance to what we heard yesterday about the number of blacks that come from broken families where they haven't got fathers there. 60% of them have been brought up by a single parent. And that predicts that you are more likely to be involved in gangs and gang-related violence. As they say here, it's not specific to the black community. The white communities are also involved. But in places like London, it is specifically to do with the black community. And on the gangs matrix that they had in London, which Sadiq Khan did away with, he did away with that because he said it was racist, because everybody on there pretty much was black. And that is just because blacks are involved in gangs. But what they're saying here is it's nothing to do with racism, saying that blacks are more likely to be involved in gangs, because also in the north we have white gangs in the north. Black African men were almost 3.4 times more likely to die of COVID-19 in the first wave of the pandemic than white British men. And of course, this is one of the key points that the anti-racists will try to bring up. And I refer to them as anti-racists. Of course, as a nationalist, we are anti-racist as well. But our way of dealing with racism is to advocate for separate communities. But those that style themselves as anti-racists, their way of dealing with this is more multiculturalism and taking things away from one community to give it to the other. So when I say anti-racist, I'm not implying that we here at Radio Albion are racist. We're not racist either. It's just we propose a different solution to the problem of racism. But these left-wing anti-racists, they point out that the fact that blacks are more likely to die of COVID-19, there is only one answer for that, and it must be racism. And of course, that is not the truth, and that is what this report has found. It has found that there are many other reasons for these discrepancies between the races, and it is not down to white people having an arbitrary dislike of certain colours. The report says that this was related to an increased risk of infection due to living in multi-generational houses and working in public-facing jobs, rather than from any difference in treatment or their ethnicity alone. And that is interesting that they're saying it's not down to their ethnicity alone, because they do tend to have weaker immune systems because their bodies are used to having more sunshine, and then when they have lots of sunshine, their body produces vitamin D. When they move to Northern Europe, and if they don't take vitamin D supplements, then it is much more difficult for their bodies to produce the vitamin D that they need, and their immune systems suffer. So I would suggest that part of the reason why they're more likely to die of COVID-19 probably is actually linked to their biology. But what they say here is it's basically down to them living in multi-generational houses and working in public-facing jobs. And the anti-racist leftist would say, well, it's racism that has forced them into working in public-facing jobs. But it's not racism. It's just the fact that they do better at that. They're better at talking and interacting. They're less self-conscious than whites, so they get given these public-facing jobs when they get taken on by people. I dare say that also because of the low average IQ, they're maybe not so good at the complicated stuff that you have to think about, and they're much more suitable to interacting with the public and being sociable. So that's why they're in these public-facing jobs. And they say that this is the reason for this discrepancy between the numbers of people dying of COVID-19. I would also suggest that something else that may have played into this is that they ignored the warnings about COVID as well. A lot of them went out on these Black Lives Matter protests when they were supposed to be staying at home. We were also told that some of them didn't speak English, and it was Britain's fault for not putting out COVID-19 warnings in hundreds of different languages and only putting it out in English. But again, that's not racism, is it, that has caused that? Some ethnic minority groups live longer, and are less likely to be diagnosed with cancer than white people, despite living in more deprived communities. And you can also say that blacks are actually more likely to get prostate cancer. They're actually far more likely to get prostate cancer and die of prostate cancer than white people. But again, that is a biological difference. And I guess they were really not looking for biological differences here. They were really just looking to see whether there was any evidence of discrimination at all. Racism and discrimination is not widespread in the health system, as it is claimed. Both black and white patients report being equally satisfied with treatment. And that is important because it's basically the patients themselves that have said that they are satisfied with the treatment and they haven't been treated any different to anybody else. And that is what you would expect. As we heard yesterday, 50% of the NHS is non-white. So to claim that the NHS is somehow being racist to non-white patients would mean that non-whites are being racist to other non-whites. And that is an accusation that they make. They are claiming that the author of this report is basically supporting racism by pointing out that there is no institutional racism. But the author of the report is not saying there is no racism. What he is saying is there is no institutionalized discrimination. There is none of this, well, we're only going to treat white people at this hospital and we're not going to treat black people. It's great they did this report. As I say, it does confirm lots of the things that we as nationalists have spoken about for years and have put forward as being the reasons for there being differences between the races, differences in outcome. It is not based on prejudice and discrimination. It's based on all these other factors, such as poverty or single parents. And we would suggest that there is also this difference to do with biology, which they do seem to be hinting at here when they say some ethnic minority groups live longer and are less likely to be diagnosed with cancer than white people, despite living in more deprived communities. So what they're saying is that there is that despite them not having very much money, despite there being poverty, and when they are measured against white people with exactly the same conditions, these ethnic minorities are living longer and are less likely to have cancer. And there can only be a biological reason for that. This is the thing with a lot of these reports. I mean, even with the David Lammy report, if you actually look at the statistics that they are discussing, you can often come to a different conclusion, or you can use the statistics to come to a conclusion as to what the reasons are that is different to the one that the report's authors come to, particularly the David Lammy one. I mean, when he says, well, because more blacks are in prison, it must be because of racism, we would suggest, well, no, that shows that there are more blacks in prison because they're more likely to commit crime. I do find it interesting that both sides on this debate end up using the same statistics to make their point of view. It does tend to say that some people just refuse to accept the truth. And of course, the people that are criticizing this report are refusing to accept the truth. And what they're doing is they are creating strawman arguments and then knocking down the strawman by saying things such as, well, this report says that there is no such thing as racism, which is not what the report says. But of course, it's very easy for them to set that up as a strawman and destroy it, because people say, well, of course, racism does exist. I know so-and-so and they've experienced racism. So it's very easy to create a strawman and then knock it down. But it's not so easy to actually look at these statistics and what they're actually saying in this report, and then knock that down. So, of course, then what they do is they move to attacking the report's authors, and they call them an Uncle Tom, or they say that they're just helping to prop up the Conservative Party, trying to pretend that the Conservative Party are racist in some way, when the Conservative Party have just opened the country up to millions of Chinamen from Hong Kong, at the same time as talking about how proud the country is of taking back control of its borders. They tell us that they're opening up the borders to everybody that lives in Hong Kong. and how as soon as they get to Britain, they will be allowed NHS treatment and all the benefits that British citizens have. And this just shows that the Conservative Party are extremely anti-racist to the point of the actual detriment of the British people by inviting over other races, essentially, which will displace the British citizens. No matter what race the British citizens are, they will be displaced by importing the Hong Kongese. It's quite clear that the Conservative Party are pro-non-whites and anti-white. They talk so often about how proud they are of how diverse the cabinet is. When you look at Priti Patel and Rishi Sunak and Jonathan Van Tam, I included an image of three of the prominent MPs to go with the podcast yesterday. This idea that somehow the Conservative Party or Boris Johnson are racist or white supremacist is just ludicrous. And this report really is a breath of fresh air, since it really could have gone the same way as the David Lammy one. It really could have just been used to attack white people rather than actually looking at the facts. So we have to thank Dr. Sewell for heading this report, and I dare say it will be, the statistics will be used by us in the future, the same as the David Lammy report statistics were used by us. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.